It's like a little sprinkling of seasoning.
Yes,
exactly. Just a little bit of philosophy on top.
Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew. And together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 5, Episode 12.
Indeed it is.
And what's our topic today, Drew?
Well, this episode we have a special guest on to talk about unreliable narrators in games. It's author, journalist, TV presenter, podcaster and philosopher Jordan Erica Weber. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. So many labels.
I know. You have a lot of hats.
I do look good in a hat.
This is very true. So we're really excited to have you on Argue the Toss. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
I think Drew pretty much covered it there. I do television. I'm on The Gadget Show on Channel 5. I'm their video games expert. Just finished my 5th series with them. So I'm an old hand now.
Gadget Show veteran.
Yeah. at the grand old age of 29. I used to write about games for The Guardian, but I don't do that so much anymore because I've got so much other stuff going on. For example, I host a podcast for The Guardian called Chips with Everything, which is about digital culture more broadly, but we do sometimes do video game episodes, like we recently did one about Pokemon. I also have my own video game podcast, which is fairly new, which is called Talking Simulator, where I have a different guest every episode and we talk about one game or one topic. Shella has been a recent guest, but I'm not sure when this episode comes out, whether that episode will be out. So either something to go and look up or to look forward to.
Exactly. So, you haven't even mentioned your book. You're an author.
Oh, I've written
a
book. You know, it's so funny that it was something that I had wanted to do for ages, write that book. And it's about philosophy and video games. And I wrote it with Dan Grigliopoulos, and we started thinking about it, I think, in 2012, because both of us are philosophy graduates. And then it didn't come out until 2017. But ever since I finished it, it's like when you revise loads for exams, and then as soon as the exam is done, you forget everything. And I just forgot. I worked so hard on it for the whole of 2016, and then it came out, and I almost immediately forgot that I'd written it. And people bring it up every now and then, and I go, "Oh yeah, no, I've written a book."
That's something to be hugely proud of.
I do feel proud of it. And it's relevant for the topic today because I don't know if we wanted to say, but the reason we're talking about this is because I had an attempt to have a conversation about unreliable narrators on Front Row on Radio 4. And obviously the time there is so limited that you get that there was so much I wasn't able to say, including some stuff that is in my book about the relationship between player and player character and information that's revealed to you and not to them, or to them and not to you, and things like that. But I'm sure we will get onto that.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, so, it was a great Front Row episode, and then we had a chat, and I was like, there must be loads more to say about this. It's like, I thought it was really cool. So I think we'll start with, I was introduced to unreliable narrators when I was studying English literature at university, but could you start by defining what you mean by unreliable narrator?
Oh gosh, I feel like the English literature person should do this. as far as I understand it, it's basically, so the narrator, someone who is telling you the story, is not giving you all the information, or is maybe giving you false information. And I don't know if this is the case in English literature, but when I was looking at it in games, there were kind of different ways of doing this. Sometimes the narrator was lying, and sometimes they didn't have all of the information either. So you were getting information from them from what they thought was the case, but it wasn't actually the case. So for instance, you know, hallucinations. If someone is telling you they're seeing something, they are being unreliable, but they don't know they're being unreliable, if you see what I mean. I don't know if that's also true in English literature.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Notes on a Scandal, for instance, which was actually made into a film with Judi Dench, and it might have been Cate Blanchett, where she becomes obsessed with this fellow school teacher, but it's told from the perspective of the person with the obsession. And so she's telling her truth, but it's not the truth. And I suppose Gone Girl is quite a good example of that. Is someone telling their truth, but it's not actually what happened. And, you know, that can be like revealed in a twist, or it can be, you know, somebody who, like you say, is having a hallucination. Or, yeah, so there are different ways of doing it and different reasons to use it.
Mm. Yeah. And the counterexample I can think of where there's a narrator who's deliberately misleading the audience, the example that occurs to me is House of Leaves, in which one of the narrator characters sort of really plays with that form and addresses a reader and says, I was actually lying to you about this bit and that bit, and I've changed this bit, you can't trust me. And, yeah, it's a very deliberate thing which explores it in a sort of more metaphysical way.
Yeah, yeah, it can be really cool when it's done well.
Mm. So what are the different categories of unreliable narrator that you've found, like, in games?
So this is really interesting. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to find, but the more I thought about it, the more I found. I also was helped out quite a bit by TV Tropes, the very handy website. So one category is hallucinations and things like I just mentioned. Generally mental health, I've kind of labeled this. So this is often used in horror games, for instance. You never quite know if the things that you're seeing in some horror games are actually there or not, and that's really, really important to the genre. You know, you're seeing, you know, you turn around and something appears to go past you but then when you turn back, it's not really there. And then there are your big twists. So I guess this is more similar to what you find in literature. You have games like BioShock and Heavy Rain, where you play a large portion of the game and then at a certain point it's revealed that something about the player character that you thought was true isn't actually true. And then the third category that I came across, I think is my favourite, and that's ones that are used to comedic effect and play with the medium. So examples like in Call of Juarez, Gunslinger, which I haven't actually played, but I hear that in this game, the protagonist is telling his exploits to other patrons in a bar. And as they buy him drinks and he tells more stories, they get kind of more exaggerated. But you play through these stories. So it kind of ties into the nature of the game, you know. So he's saying, oh, this thing happened. And then you go off and play through that. And then he says, oh, actually, no, it wasn't like that. Or someone challenges him. And I think that's quite funny. And then they're used quite a lot in adventure games. So things like King's Quest, which was recently-ish remade. The main character, King Graham of Daventry, I think, is telling his granddaughter about how he became king and kind of the origin of his story. And in the game, obviously, you might die. That's a big part of adventure games, especially King's Quest. There are so many ways to die. And if you do die, he'll say, oh, and then I was, you know, eaten by a dragon or whatever. And his granddaughter will say, well, no, you weren't, because otherwise you wouldn't be here. And then he'll go, oh, yes, no, right. You're right. Of course I wasn't. This is what actually happened. And then you go back and you can play through again. And I really love when games try and find a narrative explanation for the limitations of the form. You know, you have to replay things in games. That's fundamental to the genre, almost, to the medium. I've been thinking about this a lot with relation to time loops, actually, and how they play with the medium, but that's not what we're talking about today.
We'd happily talk about that, though. We've discovered... did our... Was it our last episode? The episode before last, we were... What was it we were doing?
But it was E3, wasn't it?
It was films we wanted to see as games.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of them were things like Source Code and, sort of time loop games.
Yeah, there's loads of them. I'm actually writing an article about this for Medium. There's loads of time loop games around at the moment. There's been a sudden burst of interest.
Yeah, but sorry, I interrupted your flow. So, yeah, I mean, the reason that I sort of had this conversation with you after Front Row was like, I was like, that's a really interesting topic for games, because like I said, I'd only ever considered it in literary terms and then cinematic terms to a lesser degree. But when you start to think about it, games, as you say, actually are quite in love with the unreliable narrator. And so even games that don't centre an unreliable narrator like Bioshock does, you know, it's like the whole big reveal. There's often a hallucination scene thrown in, so like the Arkham games, Uncharted did it, and Spider-Man did it.
Fallout.
Yeah, they love a good hallucination scene or a sort of loss of memory scene. So why do you think games use them so much?
I think it has to do with the relationship between the player and the player character. The whole thing with games, the thing we're supposed to find so appealing about them is this kind of power fantasy and stepping into somebody else's shoes and having control over a different environment that we live in the real life, except in the case of The Sims, in which I just, you know, replicate my real life painstakingly. but I think, you know, the reason they're often used in this kind of twist-like way is to go, ha, you assumed, because this is a game, that you knew everything that the player character did, but you don't. And I think sometimes that can lead the player to feel quite disappointed or frustrated by an unreliable narrator, because you do assume that the character is entirely under your control and that you have all the information they have. In fact, this is why so many games use an amnesiac protagonist, I think, so that you can align that assumption on the player's part with the actual state of the character. If you have an amnesiac player character, you do have all the information they have because they have none. So when you enter the game, they're on a blank slate as much as you are. But I think more literary aspiring game writers like to kind of play with you in that way, by playing with that relationship you have with the character you're controlling.
I mean, that leads quite nicely into my next question, is what kinds of lie do we like to be told as players, and what don't we like? So the example that I was thinking of was Heavy Rain has the big reveal halfway through, which is, I mean, I'm not going to worry about spoiling Heavy Rain at this point. I think everyone who's going to play that game has played that game. But you find out halfway through the game that one of the characters that you've been controlling is, in fact, the killer. And it kind of pushes a motive on the on a playable character who you've kind of been role-playing. And it might not gel with the way you were playing that character. Your actions were not done for the reasons you thought you were doing, which kind of clunks narratively, and there's a bit of friction there. So what makes a reveal like that work, and what just feels like cheating?
I think what makes it work in Heavy Rain, and far be it from me to give David Cage too much credit, it seems by all accounts like he's not a great person. But in Heavy Rain, I think it works because you are playing as multiple characters. So already, you know that you aren't one-on-one identical with any of these characters because you're playing so many of them. And they go about their lives in between your encounters with them. So you know that you don't have that complete one-on-one relationship with them. And you see the actions of the others from the perspectives of the other characters that you play as. So I think it makes more sense in that way. Also because in Heavy Rain, when you get that reveal, you can look back over your actions and think, okay, the clues were kind of there. You know, if I had been thinking about this in the right way, if I'd gone into this game knowing there was a twist, I could have figured out what the twist was because the clues were all there. And I think that makes it better. I think there are... I'm trying to think if there are other games where they leave clues throughout. In the discussion on Front Row, when I was talking to the producer, this is what we kind of landed on. We thought that the best examples were the ones where you do have some clues and it's not just a sudden reveal. So in Bioshock, for instance, I guess there is the frequent use of that phrase, "Would you kindly?" And it does strike you as a bit odd throughout the game that you keep hearing him say this, and you could theoretically figure out that something was up, and then when the twist is revealed, you go, oh yes, okay, that explains it, rather than, whoa, that came out of nowhere.
As a just sort of cheap shot to make the story interesting. I'm making a game called Before I Forget, and until you said, I hadn't really considered Sunita, our player character, as an unreliable narrator. But she is. She has dementia, so she doesn't always hold on to her memories, and some of her memories she thinks are happening now when actually they happened in the past. and she doesn't remember where things are in the house. And so when we did our first took a demo to shows, it was quite interesting watching players, because players kind of like to win, like to feel that they're winning. And dementia, of course, doesn't give you that feeling. You know, it doesn't fall into the sort of power fantasy that gamers are used to. So it was we have this looping section where she's looking for the bathroom because she needs to go to the toilet, but she can't remember where the bathroom is. So every time you open a door, you end up in the same place. And yeah, so, and it's interesting. So they get confused and then they're like, right. So they try to be strategic about it. It's like, okay, so I've been in that door, I'll go in this door next. And then they're like, huh, that didn't work. And so then they'd get to the end of the demo and basically you're too late, you don't make it. And she wets herself, and they are just, they're utterly frustrated by that. They're like, so is there a way to win? And I was like, no, there isn't. She just doesn't know where the bathroom is. I just thought it was really interesting how frustration is a thing that game designers usually try to eliminate from games, because it can make people bounce out. But with Before I Forget, we've been kind of using it as, you know, sort of to help people understand what it's like, because that's the point of the game, essentially. It does have a mystery at the centre, but it also uses frustration.
I really like when games use frustration intentionally, not in the kind of Dark Souls sense of, oh, this is meant to be unplayably hard, but in a kind of, in a narrative and thematic sense. So things like in That Dragon Cancer, the whole point of the game is that no matter how hard you try, sometimes you can't save your dying child, you know, and they intentionally take control away from the player, which players typically don't really like, in order to convey that feeling. And I think, going back to Unreliable Narrators, her story does this quite well as well.
Yeah.
Because you go through and you gradually do find answers to your questions, but at the end you're left still with more questions. He refuses to give you a clear answer for what actually happened and what explains the story there.
Yeah, I love that game so much. I loved her story. So is there something about, so my next question was, what does it have to say about the realities that games create?
What do unreliable narrators have to say?
So how does that play with what is reality? You know, when in a game we're setting up a certain reality, and then at some point we pull the rug from under that, and you know, so how does that play into some of your philosophical ideas about what is real?
Oh, sure. So I specifically wrote about the hallucination kind of unreliable narration with reference to games like Spec Ops The Line, in which, I don't know if either of you have played that.
I replayed it quite recently, actually.
So I think it's probably okay to spoil Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
But so at the end of that game, you realise that the character you've been playing as has been hallucinating orders from a superior that he's been carrying out, and he's been committing atrocities. And I guess the explanation is that he has PTSD, and that he's kind of trying to justify things to himself in his mind. But the interesting thing about that example, I think, so in some games, hallucinations are very obvious. In the Fallout series, when your character has a hallucination, the screen goes a different colour and things go a bit blurry. You know that it's happening. But in Spec Ops The Line, you don't know until the end that you are having hallucinations, because the experiences that are hallucinatory are exactly the same as the experiences that are not. You can't tell the difference. And that is fundamental for a philosophical argument for skepticism, which is the idea that we don't know what we think we know. We can't know that we're getting true knowledge about the world. And Descartes makes this argument. You know, he says, we know that we can't always trust our senses. Sometimes we experience illusions, like when you put a stick in water, it looks bent, but it's not. And sometimes we experience hallucinations. You know, we see things and they're not actually there. So how do we know that we can trust our senses ever? And he says, I think there's a really great quote that he gives, but he says, basically, I don't think it's prudent to trust something that has deceived us even once. And our senses deceive us multiple times, so we oughtn't trust them at all, basically. And that's quite, I mean, it's going quite far, but he is trying to figure out the fundamental building blocks of knowledge that he can build his whole philosophical position on top of, which he eventually does with the help of God. So, yeah. You know, he's left a load of philosophers not quite satisfied with that.
It's not convincing.
but you know, the unreliable narrator in games is a really great way of illustrating this, because you go through the game thinking, okay, everything I see here looks the same kind of way. Nothing, you know, the screen isn't going fuzzy or anything, so I can assume that everything is giving me true knowledge about the world. And then you realize that some of those scenes weren't accurately representing what was actually out there, but you had no way of knowing. And that's the basis of that philosophical argument.
That was, lost my
so we should just tell people to read my book.
Yeah, like I'm absolutely happy to do that, because I have read it myself and it is really good. So I sort of went through that the chapter that you were just describing yesterday, just as sort of preparation for this. And yeah, it's a really good book, and I recommend anyone who's interested in games or philosophy to pick it up. That's quite right. So which games use unreliable narrators particularly well, in your opinion? Do you have a favorite or a least favorite? Is there one that really does or doesn't work for you?
So I think in terms of the general categories, I think the ones I prefer are the ones that are funny and that play with the nature of the medium. So again, things like adventure games, where you know that can't actually be the true canonical history of what happened, because if your character died, they wouldn't still be here to tell the tale. And I think that's really interesting. I really, really like Her Story as well, because I think the best thing about Her Story is that rather than you experiencing a particular narrative and then someone coming along and suddenly telling you that everything you believed was wrong, you kind of know right from the beginning, you have a suspicion that she's not quite telling the truth, and you figure it out for yourself, and you get to decide for yourself what is true, rather than there's often a problem with games trying to tell interesting stories where, because of the limitations of the medium, they do just come along and say, here is the story. And Draugen did this, I feel like. So that's a recent game with an unreliable narrator where you know that the character is unreliable from the beginning, and there are clues peppered throughout, but everything is revealed kind of in one big scene where his imaginary friend basically tells him things that he already knows for the benefit of the player, which I didn't really... It just felt like a lot of exposition all at once, and it wasn't very smooth. Whereas in Her Story, you know, things are revealed gradually, and like I said, at the end, you have to decide for yourself what you think is true, rather than the game laying it out for you, and I think that's really interesting.
And also, the whole framing of the setting of Her Story is that you may not believe what this person is saying, because it's a police interview, and somebody's gone missing. Are they missing at that point? So, so immediately you're put on an you're sort of interrogating a person. I mean, I know that you're not the actual interviewer, but you're like accessing police files. So there's going to be something to reveal there. So, it's really nicely set up.
And I suppose she isn't the player character.
No.
So it's the narrator is somebody else other than the person you're controlling.
Yeah, I mean, that was something, a question I was going to ask about the nature of what is a narrator in a game. Like, because I think that's probably why I never thought of unreliable narrators, because quite often I don't think of the player characters in those terms. I mean, sometimes we have omniscient narrators, you know, especially in sort of fantasy games, you know, maybe like Fable or something like that. I can't remember if I actually used one or not, but games like that, the more sort of comical fantasy games, might have an omniscient narrator. But in a first person shoot, I know it's like a POV thing, the narrator, but yeah, I just don't think of them in those same terms as I would in a book.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I guess if it's the player character, it's kind of like a first person narrative in a book. But then sometimes you're also being told a story by another character. So like in Her Story. Yeah. Or I think there's an example in Dragon Age where there's a character who tells you things that have happened, and then you play through those scenes, and they aren't telling the truth about what actually went down. But it's not the player character, it's a secondary character.
Yeah, it is quite interesting, the sort of nature of what is a narrator in video games.
Yeah.
So, I think that's it. on that pregnant pause.
The problem with philosophical discussions is that after you finish talking, you immediately want to just sit there and think about it for a little while.
Oh yeah, no. We ask questions, we don't provide answers.
Yeah. So I think that is it. Thank you so much, Jordan, for coming on.
You're absolutely welcome.
I love a good deep dive on literary and cinematic devices in games. And then with Jordan, of course, you get added philosophy, which is cool.
It's like a little sprinkling of seasoning.
Yes, exactly.
Just a little bit of philosophy on top.
So quickly remind people where they can find you, your podcast, and the title of your book. I don't think we've actually said the full title, so do that.
Okay, well, the title, as chosen by the publisher, was 10 Things Video Games Can Teach Us About Life, Philosophy, and Everything. It's an introduction to philosophical thought experiments through the lens of video games, basically. And I wrote it with Dan Grigliopoulos. I did the first 5 chapters, which are kind of introductory, more analytical philosophy, and he did the latter 5 chapters, which are tend more towards the continental stuff, which I didn't really study, but he went to Oxford, so you know. And then my podcast is called Talking Simulator, and you can find it on most podcast apps, I think. And it has a website as well, which is really lovely. And I am on Twitter at Jerrica Weber, which is J Erica Weber with 2 B's. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I'm also on Instagram, but I don't think that's relevant for this conversation. Lots of baked goods and clothes on there.
Excellent.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been a really interesting discussion.
I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, if you enjoyed this episode of Value the Talk, please, please leave us a comment. If you have anything you want to sort of contribute to the discussion, if you have any examples of unreliable narrators that you really liked or disliked in games, please let us know about it. You can do that.
All the philosophers that listen to Argue the Talk.
You can do that on gameindustry.com in the podcast section. You can find us all sorts of places. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify and wherever good podcasts are sold. Please rate us, give us stars, thumbs up, whatever you can on your podcast delivery mechanism of choice. They all help. They really, you know, do good things for this podcast. And we just generally love validation. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning, so...
Oh, yeah, same.
Please do.
We live in that age. So, this was Are You the Toss? Or was it? Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.
What a good way to end it.